Welcome to Worlds Unknown, exclusively on the Geekspeak Podcast Network. In here, you may find UFOs, Bigfoot, the afterlife, and anything else not from our world, but from Worlds Unknown. Here's the host of Worlds Unknown, Angel Navarez.
Going on, welcome to another episode of Worlds Unknown. Today we are going to go to the most unknown of all the worlds, and that is
heaven or hell, if you're not
whatever you believe in. We're gonna ask the question. We're probably not gonna be able to answer, because I don't think, unless we go there somehow, none of us can. What happens when we close our eyes for the final time ever on this planet, on this world? What happens? Where do we go? There's the typical that we mentioned in another episode before. You and I were raised Catholic, so we probably have that vision. We hope that's where we're going to go at the end, or the other place where you and I don't like heats, and so hope we don't go there. Where do we really go? Or is it just you close your eyes? That's it. There's nothing. All that really matters is what you do here in this world.
I think that's scarier, knowing that you close your eyes and that's it. Do you think people would change their lives if they knew once you have no pulse, you're gone?
Make it a broad question. If we did know somehow, like we know if you do this kind of activity, this is going to come out of it. If you drink too much, your liver is going to fail on you somewhere down the line. You know that, the consequences. Yeah. If you knew when the time of your death was going to be, how would you live your life?
Would you live it better?
Or would you say, I'm going to die anyway, so hey, whatever.
I would be more scared to do whatever the hell I want and then just die. And I think you have a better chance of being a good person. And
I think it's a little controversial with or like you usually say, scandal.
It's a scandal.
Let's throw this question out there. What's the emails? Because they're going to want to answer this one.
It's angel@thegeekspeakshow.com.
Are these things just made up by us? Because whether we're raised, you know, with religion, whatever it is it just something, just a boogeyman story to scare you? You better be good or you're going to go to hell. Is it just something like that? Because what if you're not from that, the Christian or Catholic religion? Then what?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that when I was going to say smaller, but when I was like around 5 or 6, you know, that highway you take when you're going to Disneyland and you're looking at the stars and stuff. I was like always into UFOs, and I was like, wait, kind of like The Lion King. When something happens to me, am I going to be one of those stars up there? Or, you know, when someone dies, you know, it's kind of scary thinking that life still continues and you either don't exist or you do exist, but you exist somewhere else that you can't see in the real world.
No, we don't know, obviously. But do you think we feel anything? Do you think we retain what we learned here in this world and take it with us? Do we remember our loved ones? Do we remember who hurt us, who didn't hurt us, the things that we know that we learned along the way? Does that go with us? Or is it a brand new world? Don't sing. A brand new world where you start, you're reborn and you start your learning again.
Well, a lot of books out there say that when you pass away and you're kind of stuck in this age and everyone stays at the age of 30 up there. Or wherever it is. It's not like it's upstairs, but you're 30 years old because that's supposed to be the time in your life when you're established and you still look young and you're still like, your soul is still alive and stuff like that. But it's just, it's kind of tricky.
Look, I was going to ask this. Do you believe we have souls, all of us?
I believe we do.
Do you call it that, a soul, or do you call it something else, our essence, who we are? Do you call it that?
I call it more of a soul, because, you know, when you're, most of us have been to a funeral, but when you see that person in the coffin, it's like there's no life in there. And yeah, obviously they're dead, but the memories you have with that person is a part of that soul. It's just somewhere else, or maybe through someone else on this planet. We don't know. But yeah, there has to be a soul.
Now, I know what a lot of you are probably thinking, and a lot of you probably said it out loud when we started this. NDEs, near-death experiences. Maybe you've had some. Maybe you know someone who has. Maybe you've heard about them. There's a couple of clips that I want to play right now, if it's okay with you.
Yeah. It's just a very heavy, heavy, scary topic.
Well, this is two people. Well, these two I picked because one is an actual doctor who died and came back and going to talk about her experiences. The other one was an atheist. And he says he found God when he died.
How do you find God?
Let's find out. Let's play those now. We'll play them back to back and then we'll come back and finish off our thoughts on this.
A well-respected surgeon kayaking in a remote South American river drowns. 15 minutes underwater after a horrific accident pins her to the bottom of a river. No air and no way out. Amazingly, Dr. Mary Neal did manage to make it out alive after she was rescued. But she says she had a glimpse of the afterlife that she calls one of the greatest gifts she's ever received while she was struggling under that water. Author of the book To Heaven and Back, Dr. Mary Neal joins me now. She's an orthopedic spinal surgeon. Dr. Neal, thank you so much for being here. I want to start with this. Prior to this incident, were you a religious person?
I would say I was pretty typical in that I was raised in a church on Sunday mornings, and I did take my own children to Sunday school. But I think it was typical that I never incorporated spirituality into my daily life.
Did you have a thought about an afterlife or a heaven prior to this, one way or the other?
I'm not sure I really spent the time to think about it. I had four young children and a full-time job and a husband, and life gets in the way of thinking about spiritual things usually.
So you're out in this horrific accident. You find yourself under a waterfall kayaking, and you get
pinned. It wasn't horrific. It was wonderful.
Right. It starts off kind of horrific, though. And take us through it. What happens to you as you find yourself submerged underwater?
Well, I was submerged, and the force of the water had me absolutely pinned to the front deck of the boat. And so I was not able to push myself out of the boat or pull the spray skirt off and exit the boat. And I tried a number of times before it became clear that I wasn't going to be able to exit the boat on my own. And I was far enough away from the shore of the river that I didn't think anyone was going to be pulling me out. And at that time, I gave my life over to God and truly and sincerely asked that God's will be done. And at that moment, everything changed. I was very calm and peaceful and felt great. And I had this very physical sense of being held and comforted and reassured that everything would be fine. My husband and my children would be fine, regardless of whether I lived or died.
This is while you're under the water with no air, with you can't breathe, you're completely submerged. Do you believe you were dying?
Yes. I continued to do self-assessment exams, and I knew I couldn't breathe, but for me it was a very seamless transition. I had never wanted to drown. I had always been afraid of drowning, even though I'm a water person. And for me, one of the remarkable things is that I never felt panic. I never felt afraid. I was really very calm and continually reassured, even though I knew that I had no air and I knew that I was dying.
You say you felt you rose up and out of the river, and when my soul broke through the surface of the water, I encountered a group of 15 or 20 souls who greeted me with the most overwhelming joy I have ever experienced. Tell us about that.
It was fantastic. These were people, spirits, souls, I'm not quite sure what to call them. All the words sound a little goofy. But they embraced me and were so filled with love and joy. And they were people that I had known for an eternity. And they had known me for an eternity. And we were so happy to see each other. And they were clearly there to help me go down this path and protect me. And it was wonderful. They were exploding with God's love and grace. And they took me down this path that was so beautiful that I have really no words to describe it. And time and space had a different sense. And so I could rejoice with them. Simultaneously, I could look back at the riverbank and see my body being pulled to the shore and seeing CPR being started. And I looked back on my body and sort of felt fondly toward it and thought, gee, you served me well. And it was then that I truly realized that I must actually be dead.
Wow. Do you, as a doctor, have a medical explanation for any of that?
Where medicine ends, God begins. That's the real answer. Because this was not a dream or a hallucination, and it wasn't the result of a dying brain. This was more real than anything we experience here on Earth.
And now, having been through it, do you have any fear of your own death?
Oh, absolutely not. I wouldn't hasten it, but I am looking forward to going back when it's the right time.
Wow.
I have no fear.
Dr. Mary Neal, it's an incredible story, and we're so grateful that you came on to share it with us. I do want to ask you before I let you go quickly. You say one of the questions that you feel you can answer in the book is, why do bad things happen to good people? Can you leave us with your thoughts on that?
I would tell you that there's no such thing as something that's bad. As one very quick example, you called this a horrific accident. I look at it with incredible gratitude and joy. And we may not understand how a, quote, bad thing transitions into a beautiful thing. But I think when you truly have trust that that beauty exists, we can look, and it's unfortunately always retrospectively, but we can almost always look back at something and see all of the incredibly positive and beautiful things that have come out of something that would originally be called tragic.
Yeah.
Even going back as far as the death of Christ. I mean, we celebrate it.
We've got to leave it at that. But, Dr. Neal, thank you so much. The book is called To Heaven and Back, and we'll be right back.
38-year-old college professor, and I taught art, and I had taken a group of students and my wife, and we had gone around Europe, and we had just done a three-week tour, and this was the next to the last day. And we were in Paris, and at 11 o'clock in the morning, I had a perforation of my stomach. When this happened, the pain was the most acute pain I'd ever experienced in my life, and it just dropped me right down to the ground. And so I'm twisting and kicking and moaning and screaming and yelling around on the floor. And my wife called the desk, and they called an emergency service. A doctor came, and he called an ambulance because he knew what was wrong, and they took me about 8 miles across town to the public hospital, to the General Hospital of Paris, where I was taken into emergency, examined by two more doctors who knew exactly what was wrong with me, and then they took me away to the surgery hospital, which was a couple blocks away, and I was parked there because there wasn't any surgeon available to do the surgery, and so there I lay for 8 to 10 hours in that hospital with no medication, no examination, no attention whatsoever, awaiting a surgeon to come to give me this operation that was critical. And it's now 8:30 at night. Nurse came in and said that they were very sorry they weren't able to get a doctor for me, and they'd get one the next day. Well, when she said that, I knew that it was over for me. I knew that I was dead. The only thing that was keeping me alive was I didn't want to die. I was scared to death of dying because, as far as I knew, I was an atheist, non-believer, person who lived for the gratification they could get out of the moment. And, you know, like, dying to me was like the worst. I mean, next to the pain, dying was the worst thing that could happen to you because it's the end of life and there was no more. There wasn't anything else. But when she said that, the idea of trying to exist for another minute, another hour in this pain, it wasn't worth it anymore. So I said to my wife, it's time for us to say goodbye because I'm going to die now. And she got up and she put her arms around me and mine on the bed, and she told me how much she loved me, and I told her how much I loved her, and this makes me really sad to think about this. And we made our goodbyes, you know, said those things that you'd say to the, we'd been married 20 years, say all those kinds of things. I can't tell you because I'll just start crying, but she finally sat down because she knew it was over. And I knew. And it was just so hard looking at her crying like that. And I just closed my eyes. Just let it go. And I went unconscious. I probably was unconscious for a very short while. A few minutes, probably. And I was conscious again. And I looked, opened my eyes and looked, and I was standing up next to my bed. And I knew exactly where I was and what the situation was. I mean, there was no confusion in my mind. I felt more alive, more real than I've ever felt in my life. You know, people ask me, you know, were you a ghost? I was the opposite. I was just the opposite. Very alive. As I'm looking around the room, I see that there's, underneath the sheet on the bed, there's something under the sheet, a body. And so I bent over the bed, the head was turned away from me, and I looked at the face, and it looked like me. But that wasn't possible because I was standing there, I'm alive, I'm great, you know. I mean, I'm more than great, I'm like, you know. And so I tried to talk to my wife.
Can't you hear me?
And,
can't you hear me?
You know, she couldn't hear me or
that's
see
not me.
Me. But I thought that
here?
She just was ignoring me. So I got very angry at her for ignoring me. For not paying attention to me. And I'm screaming and yelling at her, what's going on here? Why is this body in the bed that looks like me, and how did it get there, and stuff like that. And I had a sneaking suspicion that the body in the bed was me. But I didn't want to think about that because that was too scary. So I'm getting really agitated and upset because this is all too weird. You know, this can't be happening. It's impossible. I've got a hospital gown on, and it's like really, everything's really real. And I hear people calling me outside the room, and they're saying to me in soft, gentle voices, Howard, you got to come with us now. Come quickly. Come out here. So I go over to the doorway of the room, and there's people out in the hallway, and they're, the hallway's dank. It's gray. It's not light or dark. It's just gray. And they're all in grayness, and they're men and women. And what they're wearing might possibly be hospital uniforms. And I asked them if they were from the doctor to take me to the operation. And I told them, I said, I'm really sick and I'm going to have an operation and I'm going to die if I don't get this operation. And I was supposed to have the operation 8 hours ago. And I'm telling them all this stuff. And they're going, we understand.
Quickly,
you know, you got to come with me.
Quickly. Howard, come out here. Howard,
come quickly.
Come with us.
Howard,
we've been waiting for you. Waiting.
I left the room, which was real, clear, bright, and went into the hallway, which was dank and hazy, and followed these people. We had a very long journey. There's no time, and whenever I make a reference to time, it's just an illusion because there was no time in this place. But this journey, if I were to recreate it, I'd have to walk like from Nashville to Louisville or something to recreate the walk with these people. And as we walked, they stayed around me and kept moving me on, and it kept getting darker and darker. They were becoming more and more openly hostile to me. First they were sort of syrupy sweet to get me to go with them, and then when I was going along with them, it was like, hurry up, keep moving, you know, shut up, stop asking questions, you know, it started getting more ugly. And so we get into complete darkness, and I'm absolutely terrified, because these people are very hostile, I don't know where I am. I said, I'm not going to go with you any further. They said, you're almost there. And we started to fight. I was trying to get away from them. They were pushing and pulling at me. And there are now a lot of them. What originally had been like a handful now was, since it was darkness, may hundreds or thousands, I have no idea. And they're playing with me. You know, clearly they could have just destroyed me if they wanted to. They didn't want to destroy me. What they wanted to do was they wanted to inflict pain on me because they derived pleasure isn't the right word, but they derived satisfaction out of the pain that I experienced. So what they were doing in the beginning part was, it's real hard for me to talk about, and I'm not going to tell you much about it, just a little bit, because just gets too ugly. But initially they were like tearing and biting, tearing with their fingernails, scratching, gouging, ripping, and then biting. And trying to defend myself, trying to fight them off, trying to get away from them, but it's like being in a beehive, just hundreds of them all over me. And I eventually was just laying on the ground there, all ripped up, pain everywhere, inside, outside. And even harder to bear than the physical pain was the emotional pain of what had just happened to me. The utter degradation that I just experienced. You know, I never once felt that it was unjust or wrong. I heard my voice. It wasn't somebody else's voice. It wasn't the voice of God or anything. It was my voice. And I heard it speak, but I didn't speak it. So whether it's the voice of my conscience or I don't know what it was. It was just, but I distinctly heard my voice say, pray to God. And so I thought to myself, I don't believe in God. Pray to God. And I'm thinking, even if I could pray, I don't know how to pray anymore. I haven't prayed. And at that time, I probably hadn't prayed in 22, 23 years. So I'm thinking, like, when I was a child and we said prayers in Sunday school and we said prayers in church, and what did we say? And I'm trying to think of it. I'm trying to think of it because to me, to pray was to recite something that I'd learned. That's what I thought a prayer was then. So let's see, the Lord is my shepherd. Give us this day our daily bread. My country, 'tis of thee. No, that's not a prayer, that's wrong. Let's see, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, 87 years ago, our forefathers. You know, I'm getting all mixed up. I can't remember how to pray. And then the people who are around me, every time I'd like mention God, these people who had attacked me and beaten me, every time I mentioned God, it was as if mentioning God was throwing boiling water on them. They would shriek, they would scream, they would yell, and in worse profanity than anything I've ever heard in this world. The other thing that was happening was that they couldn't bear to be around me talking about God. It was so painful for them to hear about God that they kept backing away, backing away, backing away. And so I had a sense that I could push them away by talking about God.
And these are just some of the clips that we've received to kind of discuss life after death. And you heard it from two sides. One where someone, you know, kind of like, oh, believe in God. And the other one is more of, oh, I never believed in God, but there's something to believe in. And same thing. They represent two different sides, but somehow they end up in a similar place. I think that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, we got to find some. I mean, maybe you can say that we're a little biased, but we got to find some, like we said in the beginning of this episode, we got to find some from other religions. Because haven't you ever noticed when people talk about life after death, what the afterlife, what's waiting for us after? It always goes to the pearly gates. It always goes to a white tunnel and they see God. They see that. Are you telling me that when we die, there is only God and nothing but?
No, there has to be like our family members or...
No, I'm saying because somebody close doesn't to that us. Isn't that kind of a slap in the face to other religions?
Yeah, it's kind of saying you're at the wrong religion.
It's an exclusive club, as in, yeah. If you don't believe in this, There's no place for you here. Sorry.
But it's kind of shady. It's not. I really highly doubt that there's somebody in front of the gates or whatever, in front of the cloud. And it's like, oh, you're, oh, what? James Franco? You're, no, go away.
Okay, you're talking about a movie now, but.
No, I know.
That's another thing also. When we get up there, do you think, like, again, and this is going to the typical Christian Catholic view, do you think we're going to be judged by the ultimate judge?
I don't think so.
Because I will tell you this. Can I get personal on our show? Sure. On the second show?
Sure.
This is what my belief is, what is going to happen to us when we do die. And this comes now from having experience, literally seeing death right in front of me. No, I didn't kill anybody, but I've seen family members. My two of my family members die right in front of me. The final moments and everything, the final breath, as they say. From that, I do see, even if, well, the second one was sick. The other one was not. It was sudden. But even the one that was sick, once they gave their final breath, I just saw a peace come over them. And quite honestly, with me having been there, watching them fade away in front of me, I felt that also. As soon as I saw, I heard and I saw them give their final breath, there was a peace that just came over me. And you could see it in their face. We knew they were gone, but you could see a peace come over them.
Yeah.
But from that point to now that I've had time to sit back and think about it, because, you know, it's a big thing. It's a big person in my life that I lost. Now I've had a chance to sit back and think about all this stuff. The way I see it is, maybe not. Maybe there isn't nothing after us. Maybe I think, and again, this is why we do a show called Worlds Unknown, where we talk about paranormal, about ghosts, and wait till you see what we're going to do in October. But I think that's why. I'll say it like this. I used to think that when we talked about ghosts from the day we met to, and that's why that's why we do this show. I think people who see those experiences, part of the reason why I won't say why, but that we did something the other day that now kind of explains why you want your paranormal experience, your ghost experience, because we want to know that they are at peace. There is something waiting for us after, and especially if we really cared about that person. Persons, if it's a lot of them, then we want to know that there's a chance that when we're done here, whatever our destiny is on this world, when we go to the next one, they're going to be there to hold our hand too.
That's a really good point, because I thought about it too. Not so much about, oh, is there a ghost or whatever that means that I'm going to be cool when I'm like ready to go or whatever, but it's just more of a, if there is a life after death for me, at least, am I doing what's here on earth? Does it really count? You know what I mean? Being a loving, caring person, does that count? And if it counts, will I really be rewarded or get to hang out with Michael Jackson or whatever? You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, as a human being, what I am doing here on earth,
no,
will
I do know
it
what
count?
You mean, because,
will it count?
No, it is very human to ask something like that, because what you're asking with not so many words is, is all this for anything, or am I doing this for nothing?
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, that is what everybody wants to know. Where do I do it? I've met a lot of people that are avowed atheists. They don't believe in nothing. You can't convince them that there's anything. You can take them to the Grand Canyon, show them, stand right at the lip and say, look, you really believe there's no God? Look at who else will create this. Oh, the oceans. They'll give you a scientific reason who created the Grand Canyon. But they're also the definition. You know, it's become a joke, those wristband things. What would Jesus do? But yeah, you got to ask that. What would Jesus do? And it's a lot what these people do. What they are avowed atheists, what they would do. They are some of the nicest, most generous, most down-to-earth people.
Yeah.
And very, very unselfish people. They're ready to give you, if they don't have a lot, they'll give you what they do have, just so that you're not suffering in the world.
There's like another argument, because, you know, atheists always have gotten kind of like
bad rap.
Yeah. And
you say bad press?
No. We're good press. No, I'm just going to say that there really are good people. And it's, I kind of feel like, what's the word? Not bad. It's just, like I said, like, are you doing on earth? Does it really count? And if it doesn't count, does it, like, how does it affect you after you die? I mean, wait, I'm just having a lot of things, thoughts going in my head, which is good.
Well, I mean, that's a question that we all
but
ask.
I'm saying it's
how,
like,
do you want to be remembered when you're gone?
Yeah, how do you want to be remembered? And there's atheists that are awesome people, but they're looked at as bad people because they don't have a religion. And I'm like, wouldn't you rather be an excellent human being or just an excellent human being and doing it only because your motivation is to get like the VIP section with Jesus, you know?
Yeah. You
and I know no, I'm all over the place,
no,
but
you're not. You and I experienced this just 3-4 weeks ago in San Diego. There is, you called it the exclusive club. Those who got into Hall H, those who didn't. But at the end of the day, the people that were in Hall H for the Marvel panel, whatever they were doing, are they any better than you and I or anybody who wasn't in Hall H?
No, because I'm pretty sure we stood at the same hotel or we stayed, you know, we eat the same and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And we all celebrate the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing here. I've always said this. Now I'm not saying I'm an atheist or anything, even though I said I was raised Catholic, that doesn't mean I still have a belief or anything. But I will say that I accept everything, everyone. Whatever your belief is, that's yours. It's what you believe. That doesn't mean that because, if for example, when I met Angel years ago, if he came to me and said, "You know what? I don't believe in nothing," then I wouldn't have said, "Well, you know what? I don't want you being part of the Geek Speak. I only want people who believe in God or believe in something." Because, I mean, I can say it now because I know you years later. It feels like 90 years we've known each other, but
this cream works.
all these years later, I can say whether Angel believes, doesn't believe, doesn't mean anything, because Angel's a phenomenal human being, and I see how she treats other people around her too. Same thing with, I've worked in radio at radio stations with people who are avowed atheists, like I said, and they to this day still are some of the nicest people I have ever met. And one of them has passed away, and I find it really hard to believe that because he didn't have a belief in anything down here, wherever he is now, he's suffering or he's paying for not believing in God or whatever. I really find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
But that's me. What do you guys think? You know, again, give him the email, give him the Twitter.
Angel at geekspeakshow.com.
Now, this is a short thing. We played a couple of clips there. We can't answer that. Nobody really can. I mean, even quote-unquote experts can try to answer it. And you'll see, because we're going to have a few. This is just a quick intro to a talk, just like we did the exorcism one. We can't answer it because we've seen the movies, but we're not experts in exorcisms or demonic possessions. Or
at least not yet.
Don't go there. Same thing with this thing. We don't know. Nobody really knows. Kind of like the line in Star Trek where Spock does and he comes back and Dr. McCoy tells him, "Wait a minute, you mean I have to die and come back to life so we can talk about death?" Unless somebody does that, we're not going to be able to talk and give you the real answer. Yeah, this is what I saw. I saw, what did you say? Never mind. That's a movie. So
yeah, that's a movie.
But that's the episode. That's a quick intro. We're going to come back to this one and come back to the exorcism one. What else we got coming up on Worlds Unknown?
I really want to get into, because, you know, October is coming up and we're going to get into monsters.
Already? Where'd the year go?
Urban legends.
Yeah. Yes, because those, I actually got a few that I want to tell you that you don't know right here in San Francisco. I took you to one time.
Yeah, you did.
We were having car issues. So
car issues on purpose.
No, I didn't get the effect that I wanted, but
it did. We heard a scream. Or I heard a scream.
Yeah,
a
we'll talk scream. About those. But there's other ones. A what?
A female scream.
Oh, that's a feral scream. but there's other urban legends here in San Francisco, in the San Francisco Bay Area, and around the world also, not just here in America. We'll deal with those. We'll deal with, you know what I want to do? And I don't want to program the show. I mean, we do it together, but still, I want to do, let's talk about the history of Halloween, not just the boo scare, the scary movie stuff. Let's talk about the history, what it really means and what it's become from then to what it is now.
Hoochified edition.
Yeah. What?
All the hoochified outfits are coming out.
You're a hoochified outfit? What?
No, I'm going to get mine made.
You got to open your mouth. What did you just say?
I'm going to get mine made. It's just Halloween. Just a little quick. Halloween is now becoming an excuse to be hoochified. Didn't change from 5 years ago. Hey, now I'm going to make my costume.
Non-hoochified?
Non-hoochified approved.
All right. So there you go. That's the episode. You know, again, we want to know what you guys think. And there's no right, there's no wrong. And please, I will say now, don't try to convince us because you don't know. You don't. Unless you've somehow died and come back, you don't know. So send them over to Angel because she handles all the stuff for Worlds Unknown. What is it again?
Angel at thegeekspeakshow.com. And I just noticed your t-shirt, The Haunted Mansion, had a birthday, yeah?
Yeah, it did.
Excellent.
Saturday. Same time as our other, the flagship show. August 9th is the Geek Speak show's birthday also. Let's go get some cake after this.
And Halloween.
So that's that. Say goodbye.
Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
We'll see you in the next episode. Like that one, huh? You'll find even more shows on the GeekSpeakNetwork.com.
Please make a note of it.
The GeekSpeak Podcast Network.